You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. And there's no tenderness like.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is September 17th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Tamsulosin. You've lost that love and feeling for renal colic. And our guest skeptics is Dr. Tony Sapal. He's a professor and the chair at the University of Arkansas in the Department of Emergency Medicine. Welcome back to the SGEM, Tony.
Hey, thanks, Ken. Always great to be back on the SGEM.
And you've brought Dr. Daniel Holliman, the chief resident at University of Arkansas for Medical Science Emergency Medicine Residency. Welcome to your first appearance on the SGEM, Daniel.
Thanks for the invitation.
Well, it's not Tony's first time. We've done a number of episodes. You know what? I want the next one to be recorded live. That's right, live at the University of Arkansas Grand Rounds.
Good one, Ken. You put me on the spot there, didn't you? I would love to have the SGEM down here in Little Rock. It is a great place. And you know, if we're going to talk about stones and the town is Little Rock, that all fits.
Oh, it's so meta. It is so very meta. Did you see how I tried to get an invitation to Grand Rounds?
That was slick. I like that. Jedi mind tricks don't work on the chair, though. Just to let you know.
Oh, Jedi mind tricks don't work on the chair. Just on the program director?
Yes, typically.
All right. Well, Dan, why don't you start us off with a case?
All right. We got a 51-year-old male. He comes into the ED with 5 hours of acute onset left flank pain. He says the pain comes in waves. It radiates to his left groin, and it's associated with nausea and vomiting. He also had some darkening of his urine, but he denies any dysuria, fever, testicular pain, or penile discharge.
So you work the patient up with a urinalysis, which shows large blood, no nitrites, and no bacteria. You obtain a CT abdomen and pelvis without contrast, and it identifies a 7-millimeter stone in the left distal ureter. The patient receives 15 milligrams of ketorolac IV. Please look at SGM number 175 because, as you recall, there is a ceiling to the analgesic effect of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. His pain improves significantly, and he is ready for discharge. He is given a referral to urology for follow-up of his ureteral stone, a prescription for oral antiemetics, and advised to take over-the-counter NSAIDs. He asks if there's anything he could do or take to help the stone pass faster.
Well, we've covered renal colic many times on the SGEM. This has included the medical expulsive therapy using alpha blockers, lidocaine for pain control, pushing IV fluids or diuretics to pass stones, ultrasound versus CT scans for diagnosis, and even acupuncture versus morphine for renal colic. I'll put a link in the show notes to all those past SGEM episodes. But Tony and Dan, can you give us the SGEM bottom lines on the management of renal colic from those previous episodes?
Sure thing, Ken. So expulsive therapy is unnecessary for ureteric stones less than 5 millimeters.
You don't need to push fluids, oral or IV, or use diuretics to pass kidney stones.
There is some weak evidence that tamsulosin may help passage of larger stones, those measuring 5 to 10 millimeters.
Bedside emergency department ultrasound is safe and has several advantages over CT for the diagnosis of kidney stones.
Lidocaine cannot, and I will emphasize cannot, be recommended for the treatment of renal colic at this time.
Also, the evidence does not support the claim that acupuncture is superior to morphine for renal colic.
So what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's episode, Tony?
Does initiation of tamsulosin at the time of diagnosis in ED patients with symptomatic ureteral stones less than 9 millimeters increase the rate of stone passage in the following 28 days?
Dan, what's the study that we have that's going to try to address this question?
So we reviewed Meltzer et al., the effect of tamsulosin on passage of symptomatic ureteral stones, a randomized clinical trial. This was in JAMA Internal Medicine in 2018.
All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
Emergency department patients older than 17 years of age with symptomatic ureteral stones less than 9 millimeters as determined by CT.
And I went and looked for who was excluded from this, and I really couldn't find it in the paper. And so they did have the clinicaltrials.gov website trial registry number. And so I looked that up, and there was 19 exclusions that can be found for this study. So I'll list those in the show notes. How about the intervention?
Tamsulosin, 0.4 milligrams daily for 28 days.
And what did they compare it to?
Placebo.
And what was the primary outcome?
Passage of the stone within 28 days, determined by visualization or physical capture of the stone by the patient.
And what were the secondary outcomes, Dan?
Assessment of stone passage by follow-up CT, number who crossed over to open-label tamsulosin, proportion who returned to work, rate of surgical procedures, rate of hospitalization, percentage returning to the ED, duration of analgesic medication use, and time to passage of stone.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, tamsulosin did not significantly increase the stone passage rate compared with placebo. Our findings did not support the use of tamsulosin for symptomatic urinary stones smaller than 9 millimeters. Guidelines for medical expulsive therapy for urinary stones may need to be revised. End of quote. Okay, Dan, you and I are going to zip through the checklist for randomized clinical trials. The study population, did it include or focus on those in the emergency department?
Yes.
The patients, were they adequately randomized?
Yes. They used the simple urn with site stratification.
Okay, I think we're going to have to call in a higher power here. Tony, can you briefly explain what urn randomization is?
So, Ken, as far as I know, urn randomization deals with block stratification of randomization. And what this allows the investigators to do is balance the patients across the trial with specific stratifications. So in this case, they use study location to stratify patients. In other trials, you could stratify by risk factors like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, etc.
Oh, it's always another layer of nerdiness. I'll put a link in the show notes if people want to look up that further. How about the randomization process, Dan? Was it concealed?
Unsure. They didn't really describe it in the paper.
Did they analyze the groups in which they were randomized?
Yes.
Did they recruit consecutively?
Yes.
Were the patients in both groups similar with regards to prognostic factors?
Yes.
Were all participants unaware of group allocation?
Yes.
Did they treat everybody equally?
Yes.
How was their follow-up?
It was generally complete. About 15 patients, 3% were lost to follow-up, and it was similar in both groups.
Were all patient important outcomes considered?
I'm not sure. They did well considering many outcomes to include the adverse effects of the intervention.
Yeah, Ken, I would like to have seen some cost and interactions with antihypertensives evaluated in this trial.
Oh, it's always about the money down there, isn't it? Okay, number 11, the final question. The treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No. For the primary outcome, there was not a statistically significant difference.
Let's run through those key results. The study included 267 patients randomized to tamsulosin and 245 patients randomized to placebo. The mean age was roughly 41 years of age, with just over a quarter being female. The mean diameter of urinary stones was 3.8 millimeters, with about a quarter being 5 millimeters or greater. Just over two-thirds of the stones were in the distal ureter, the UVJ junction, or the bladder. Tony, give us the main result.
No difference in stone passage at 28 days.
Yeah, at 28 days for that primary outcome, stone passage rate was 49.6% for tamsulosin and 47.3% for the placebo. How about the secondary outcomes, Dan?
So for the secondary outcomes, again, there was no difference between the treatment groups for any of the secondary outcomes. When we considered the adverse effects of the treatment, those were also similar with the exception of ejaculatory dysfunction in men, which was more common in the tamsulosin group.
All right, Dan, Tony, are you ready to talk nerdy to me?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, before I get started on the five nerdy points, I just wanted to point out something. And it's the difference between a cynic and a skeptic. And there was a good tweet recently by a man named Adam Grant. And he said at the end of his tweet, "Cynics are pessimists, skeptics are realists. And we realize how hard it is to do research. So we don't want to come across as being cynics or nihilists. We think this was a well-designed, multi-center, randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trial in emergency department patients in various different urban EDs representing different but not all U.S. geographic regions. This study has not differed from recent conclusions on tamsulosin use in symptomatic ureteric stones. For stones less than 9 millimeters, there just isn't convincing evidence that stones are passed any faster. This study represents a strong addition to the literature on the lack of benefit of medical expulsive therapy. But that doesn't make us cynics and that doesn't make us nihilists. It just makes us skeptics. So let's go through 5 points. The first thing I wanted to talk about was how this is consistent or not consistent with prior trials.
So Ken, this trial cited a stone passage rate of only 50% at 28 days. The prior two trials we reviewed, Furyk and Pickard, found stone passage rates greater than 80% at 28 days. In the Meltzer trial, stone passage was primarily measured by patient report, either visualization or capture of the stone in 28 days, compared to Furyk and Pickard, where it was found as an absence of stone on CT and absence of the need for additional intervention, respectively. So they weren't really comparing apples to apples. Additionally, in phase two of the Meltzer trial, absence on CT was a secondary outcome, which had a similar sample size, but had passage rates of 83.6% and 77.6%. That's tamsulosin versus placebo. Other factors to consider are sampling bias due to history of stones, not getting a CT initially, location of stones, as well as some other factors.
Okay, so that clears it up with regards to the consistency with other trials. Let's get on to nerdy point number two. And this is about systematic reviews and meta-analyses of stones less than 5 millimeters.
Yeah, why are we still talking about this? It would definitely be an error to make a logical leap based on this study alone, because this population was all stones less than 9 millimeters. But considering the theoretical benefit that tamsulosin confers, one would think that the pooled evidence for its benefit in stones less than 5 millimeters is pretty damning. Pooling the subgroups from several trials would be interesting to see reported in a systematic review and meta-analysis.
Well, there goes my iTunes rating with you saying damning. All right, we're going to move on to nerdy point number three, and this is about subgroup analysis of 5 to 9 millimeter stones.
So Ken, I think most listeners are probably wondering if the subgroup of stones between 5 and 8 millimeters is worthy of studying on its own. The large majority of stones in this study and others are smaller than 5 millimeters. If the goal of the trial is to prove that tamsulosin is not effective for stones less than 9 millimeters, it would have been nice to see an even distribution of stone sizes in this study population. Considering that urologic guidelines specifically delineate between 5 millimeters, either stones less than that or larger, it would make sense to focus on this group. Increasing the power to analyze this group would be beneficial. That being said, a 4-year enrollment period at 6 different EDs yielded only 512 patients. Of the total population, only 133 had stones in the range of 5 to 8 millimeters. Prevalence may be low enough for this subgroup that further studies would be difficult or inefficient. Previous studies recommending tamsulosin in the 5 to 10 millimeter group were underpowered and are discussed in SGEM number 154.
All right, the fourth nerdy point, urology guidelines.
Yeah, the discussion at hand is whether the urologic guidelines are based on the best evidence. This paper would suggest that they are not, and it recommends revision of said guidelines. As emergency medicine physicians, we find ourselves in a position to advocate for our patients and do what is in their best interest. Many emergency medicine attendings I've spoken to state that they know what the evidence suggests, but they also know that many urologists will not consider further intervention until a course of medical expulsive therapy has been done. EM physicians feel that their hands are tied and they must prescribe tamsulosin so that their patients do not have potential delays in care.
Well, that leads us to our next nerdy point, and this is about consultant relations.
So, preaching to the choir here, Ken, but of course we need to be professional in our discussions with all of our colleagues. Maintaining trust and respect in those relationships is extremely important. This can pave the way for intelligent conversations about the latest scientific evidence on tamsulosin. Try to avoid tribalism with the urologist and do not be rude when discussing medical expulsive therapy. Consider inviting them to grand rounds to discuss how the literature can be applied so patients with renal colic get the best care possible based on the evidence, and maybe even send them a link to this SGEM podcast.
All right. Well, that brings us to the point where we comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Yeah, Ken, I think we agree with the author's conclusions about avoiding the prescription of tamsulosin for ureteral stones less than 9 millimeters.
Tony, what's the bottom line?
Medical expulsive therapy is not recommended for ureteral stones less than 9 millimeters.
Can you resolve the case you presented then?
Yeah, so the patient is discharged and not prescribed tamsulosin. He does follow up with the urologist 3 weeks after his ED visit. He continued to have pain for a week after his visit, which was partially controlled with NSAIDs. The patient believes he passed the stone, but did not visualize the stone. A kidney, ureter, bladder x-ray is performed in clinic, which does not identify a ureteral stone, and the patient is advised to follow up as needed.
So, Tony, how do you think we should take this information and apply it clinically?
So there are many discussions to be had with our urology colleagues to determine the allocation of resources in the best interests of our patients. The guidelines published by the American Urological Association should also reflect the latest research. In female patients with stones between 5 and 9 millimeters, perhaps tamsulosin could be used with less risk, but the current literature does not support its routine use. Otherwise, uncomplicated stones less than 9 millimeters can be treated conservatively.
So what are you going to tell your patient?
Look, the evidence supporting the use of tamsulosin for kidney stones is very weak. In men like you, there could be a risk of ejaculatory dysfunction while taking this medicine. Some urologists still like to have their patients try a course of this medicine. When you see the urologist in follow-up, they may still prescribe tamsulosin, even though we do not recommend it at this time.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Dr. Kirsten Johannesson, a PGY2 EM resident at Beaumont Trenton in Michigan. She knew the name of the 1957 landmark legal case about informed consent was Salgo v. Leland Stanford Jr. University Board of Trustees. Tony, we've done so many of these SGEMs on renal colic, I was running out of trivia questions. My first thought, though, was to have you ask a question about quality tequilas, because I have it on good information that you are an expert on the topic. However, in keeping with our theme music from the 1980s movie Top Gun, you do have a question.
All right, Ken, that is inviting because I love tequilas. But here's the Keener contest question. In the movie Top Gun, at what range does Maverick claim to have pulled a 4G inverted dive with a MIG?
Ooh, if you know the answer to this awesome 80s question, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there has been some other FOMED on this paper, and so I will list those in the show notes. Thanks, Dan, for coming on the SGEM, and good luck with your last year of EM residency.
Thanks for inviting me, Ken. It's been fun.
Tony, you going to ASEP this year?
Unfortunately, Ken, I cannot make it this year.
Yeah, actually, I can't attend either. I've got a family commitment. However, I would like to start planning my trip to Arkansas.
Hey, you should do it, man. It's a short drive from rural Ontario.
Dan, can you give us the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.